Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play. This show is brought to you by our patrons at patreon.com/ElderScrollsLoreCast.
Robots Radio presents
The Elder Scrolls LoreCast.
Welcome to The Elder Scrolls LoreCast, a place where the Elder Scrolls community can come together to discuss the boundaries of our knowledge about the universe of The Elder Scrolls. Welcome, adventurers. Welcome back to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. My nose is very itchy, so if it looks like I'm itching my nose, it's probably because I've been snorting too much crack cocaine, which is a bad idea. Never do crack cocaine.
On the flip side, you're very ready for the show.
I am so ready. I'm aggressively ready and energized to talk about the Divines, and specifically RK, but we'll get into that in a minute. I am your host, Tom or Robots, and I don't actually do crack cocaine, so please don't take that seriously. Here with me, as well as somebody else who doesn't do crack cocaine, as far as I know, Lotus of Doom. What's up, Lotus? How's it going?
Things are well. I like to stick to skooma personally. That's the money drug right there.
yes. You want some moon sugar? This one thinks it is wonderful. I don't know where my accent kind of went. So yeah. I don't think they have crack cocaine in Elder Scrolls. It's all just skooma alcohol.
Right. Sujama.
So anyway, welcome back, everybody.
We
could
do an episode on all the drugs of Tamriel.
Yeah, we could totally do an episode on that. But anyway, we're back. We're live. It's 9 p.m. on Thursday night at Eastern time, twitch.tv/robotsradio. And we're continuing down this list of the Divines and some of the other godlike entities in the world. And second on that list is RK. It's RK, okay? I have to make that joke. I made it during the pre-show, and I just got to keep going with it.
It needed to happen.
Okay. RK. So I think from now on, whenever I say okay, I'm going to say RK, and I'm going to look at people to see if they recognize that.
If they get it, just like really double down on it.
Right. And be like, are you Elder Scrolls? Cool. RK. So anyway, let's just dig in. So as usual, we're pulling some info from the UESP.net article about RK and some other stuff that we'll get to as we go on with the episode. And it says here, and I love the little piece they put at the top here, because it's a little quote from the Ten Commands, Nine Divines book or article, however, whatever you want to call it. It says, RK says, honor the earth, its creatures and the spirits, living and dead. Guard and tend the bounties of the mortal world, and do not profane the spirits of the dead. You can see where this is going, and I think you can probably already tell who isn't a big fan of RK. So It says here, RK or ARK, comma, A?
Yeah.
No, it's not a comma. It's a, what is that? It's a apostrophe.
Yeah.
ARK apostrophe A.
I think it's one of those things where, like, you say it the same way, but some people just spell it differently.
Right. Right.
I don't know if I'd actually say it any different if I saw it that way. I would assume you would, whatever regional dialect, would just be RK no matter what.
Yeah. And you know what just occurred to me? Your co-host on your other podcast, Tales of Tamriel, has Arkaneer. Has Ark in his name. Maybe
you know what?
Maybe we need to tease him about being a worshiper of Ark.
What we need to do is also just add an unexplained apostrophe to his name.
Totally. I'm sure he'd appreciate that. Whenever I see him stream next, I'm going to pop in and be like, hey, Ark Anir.
Yeah. So, Ark, if you listen to the show in advance, you'll know about this prior to the joke being made. And if not, you'll retroactively realize that we gave you a heads up and you missed it because you weren't keeping up to date on our episode.
That's right. This episode will go up two mornings from now for our non-patrons. Mm-hmm. So maybe I'll try to sneak into one of his streams tomorrow if he's streaming and be like, what's up, Ark in here? Anyway, man, we're getting sidetracked right at the beginning. Usually I try to save that for like at least the middle of the show. So It says here, known as the Lord of the Wheel of Life. Wheel of Life, not Wheel of Cheese. That's a different Daedric Prince. And the god of the cycle of birth and death is a member of the Divines and also a popular god in other cultures. Arke is often more important in those cultures where his father Akatosh, who we talked about last week, is either less related to time or where his time aspects are difficult to comprehend by the layman. So, wait, let's pause. Difficult to comprehend by the... Does this mean that Arke is more popular in dumber cultures?
That's how that's read.
Yeah,
which
I don't think that's actually what it means, but...
No, but I mean, that's kind of how it's worded. For the only thing about that, which I guess here's your information on, well, that's awkward, is RK is one of my favorite divines. So what does that say about me?
Well, you know, okay, so from at least as much as we've talked about so far, RK makes a lot of sense to be a more popular divine because the flow of time is not something that it goes away ever, or at least if it did, we wouldn't know about it. We talked about this last week, right? Yeah. It's one of those things that just seems like a constant. The cycle of birth and death is something that varies. Like the length of a life can change. How healthy a birth is can change.
Yes.
The cycle of birth and death traditionally in many cultures has been tied to the cycle of fertility of the land and the earth and those kinds of things. And that, of course, means that you will have a bountiful harvest or you won't. And if you don't, guess what happens? More death, you know? So
yeah,
it's not something you also, that you can expect to be the same all the time, like the flow of time appears to be.
Right. And in this situation, you're going to, I guess, if you want to, instead of saying it like the layman as in like, you know, smart or, you know, learned or whatever, or not, we could just go to maybe more of, because there's many hierarchies in Tamriel. Why don't we go with referring to it maybe almost as like the common man in this situation, whereas everybody, whether they're scholars or not in the series, are going to be involved with this much more directly than a concept of time.
Right. So right. It's less philosophical and more concrete.
Exactly. That's exactly it. So that would have a stronger connection to pretty much everybody except people who research and study this stuff.
Right. Right. Yeah. If you're going to philosophize about time and the beginning of existence, then you probably have some extra spare time on your hands to do that. Somebody who's worried about the life and death cycle is going to be everyone from the average farmer to the slave labor Argonian trying to just get by, you know, in a Dunmer manner where they're, you know, a slave, any of that stuff, right? Okay.
Exactly.
So let's go on. He is the god of burials and funeral rites and is generally associated with cyclical occasions such as the seasons and life and death. And remember, I mentioned a little bit about the Hindu gods last time, Vishnu and Siwa and you know, Brahma. This is kind of connected to that, less in the concept of time moving and more in the cycle of life and death, which is very much what those concepts have to do with. So it goes on, it says, his priests are staunch opponents of necromancy and all forms of the undead and are empowered to bestow Arcade's blessings, which prevent the forceful misuse of a mortal soul. So this is interesting, and I kind of foreshadow this during the little intro section. Anybody who has anything to do with necromancy is doing something that is considered to be unnatural. They're breaking the cycle of death and life. And so Arke, for one, and his followers are going to be very much against that. Like, hey, don't mess with death and life. You're not supposed to do that. Bad, 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 bad. And it looks like they even are bestowed with the power to, in some ways, prevent that from happening.
Right. And that's, you know, so example, two games, you know, long-standing villain Mana Marco, not going to get along too much with Priest of Arke or Arke himself.
Right, right. And that's this is going to come up a little bit later too. There's going to be there's a bit later on, so hold on to that. Put that in your pocket. Right. Put Mana Marco in your pocket. He doesn't fit very well, but stuff him in there.
Well, we'll put him in the closet. It's fine.
Yeah, just keep. Yeah, he's probably the right kind of guy to keep in the closet. Along with your skeletons, it makes sense. So it goes on. It says, thus, anybody properly buried by a priest observing the proper rituals is protected by Arkay's law from being raised as undead. So it seems like a very, very good deity to be worshiping if you want to make sure that you don't come back as one of many Marco's skeletons or zombies or something. So that's very interesting. This idea that nobody, anybody who's being processed correctly, according to this, is actually safe from that, which is pretty cool. Therefore,
that is an unnerving way of putting that, though, to be processed.
Correctly. Yes, it's a process. No. You got to do the little thing and bury them.
When I'm thinking process, that's not like I feel like we were delving back into the necromancy side of things, but I do know, I know what you're saying, but yeah, it's you gotta have the proper rituals for all of this.
I have been known to play a necromancer. Maybe I've been a little affected by that. So it finishes up and says, therefore, necromancers view Arkay as their ultimate enemy and make covert efforts, and maybe not so covert efforts, to undermine his worship throughout Tamriel. Because of this association with and protection of mortality, he is sometimes called the Mortals God, which is a cool, kind of a cool thing. The God of the Mortals. There are two legends about Arkay's origin. And of course, with all of this stuff, who knows which of these is actually true, which is, like we talked about in the last episode, says more about the culture it comes from than the god themselves. But let's dig into this. One told by the Bretons is written in the book Arkay, the God of Birth and Death. It states that Arkay was once a mortal shopkeeper with a passion for knowledge. Now, we know about the origins of the Aedra, and none of them other than Talos is said to have mantled into at least one of the divines, the positions. I mean, other mortals have mantled before, but the position of the divines specifically, Talos is the only one we know of. Right. So that this seems unlikely. And again, it seems more like a lesson than a actual factual past.
Yeah.
He found a book written in a strange language and spent years upon years attempting to decipher it, slowly ignoring everything and everyone else around him. Eventually, Arkay realized the book explained life and death itself, but by this time was at death's door with an incurable plague. Praying to Mara as a last resort, Arkay asked for more time to interpret the book. Mara gave him a choice: die now or become a god for eternity, charged with keeping the balance of death and life in the universe. Which is interesting because it puts Mara at the forefront of this and as the one who basically created Arkay, even though Akatosh is traditionally seen as Arkay's father and the progenitor of Arkay. So kind of an interesting mix of stuff there.
Yeah, that it gives. I mean, there's when we were discussing Daedra, there's ages, quote unquote, related to, you know, Ur-Daedra and stuff like that with the original. And this is very much playing on that from the divine's angle, where it's like, well, according to this, there would be Mara clearly supersedes this. Mm-hmm. But if this was also true, then there was an unregulated life and death cycle prior to Arkay, I guess.
Yeah, like this must have, how is he a mortal shopkeeper if there was no definition of what a mortal is based on life and death? You know, like, it's a little bit the cart before the horse, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, a little strange. Now, the alternative is contained in the monomyth, which we've talked about before, which suggests that Arkay was one of the very first spirits to crystallize after the start of time, which has a little bit more of a kind of natural feeling to it. You have Akatosh crystallizing time, and then because Akatosh is the soul of Ariel and all that stuff, and therefore the most powerful of the divines, the other divines then begin to crystallize because time exists. So now they have a time and space with which to crystallize in, right? So,
exactly.
And if something is, or one of these is going to be powerful enough to control the cycles of life and death, then that seems pretty freaking potent. So it seems to make sense. Now, I wouldn't be surprised if the story about the mortal shopkeeper and Mara wasn't a story that was passed down by people who worshipped Mara over Arkay and saw Mara as the predominant figure of the two and wanted to come up with a reason to justify that. That's what that kind of feels like to me.
Right. I kind of agree with that as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, this happens in human cultures as well, especially if you go back to periods of time, like, for example, Old Testament biblical times, where you have these different groups of people like the Canaanites and the whoever, and they all have their own gods and they have these stories as to why their god is more powerful or important or the progenitor of a competing god from another culture. And in some cases, there's no sense of like, only my god exists, these other gods are false. There's more of a sense of like, well, all these gods exist, but ours is the best one, and here's why. So there's a lot of that kind of stuff that happens historically. So this kind of feels like that to me.
I agree with that. I don't really have too much to add there, because I kind of share your sentiments on that whole situation.
Yeah, yeah. So any other thoughts on Arkay and the cycles of life and death? He doesn't, well, a lot of these divines don't take such a prominent hold on stories in the Elder Scrolls so much, because they kind of just act like they're behind the scenes in a lot of cases.
So, yeah, the thing that's very different that I joked before, it could be on this show, it might have been on Tales of Tamriel, or just in general, I joke about it. If you want to get something done, you largely don't pray to the divines, you pray to the Daedra, because you'll get results that way. Largely, it seems like many of the divines in the series are more theoretical figureheads representing something than actually being involved with too many things. You never really run into a divine where you regularly run into Daedric princes, and they're much, much more involved than the divines. It's, you know, we'll get into other divines, but like Mara, it's like, well, okay, yeah, that's great. And then you have like your Pledge of Mara, that's how you get married.
Right, right.
She doesn't show up and marry you. You just get married in Mara's name.
Like, right, right. And Mara has to do with love, fertility, agriculture, right, yeah, those kinds of things. So
exactly,
it would make sense that in some ways, like going back to this other stuff, that Mara is a similar figure to Arkay. Fertility and agriculture is very similarly connected to life and death. So you could see why, like, some cultures would focus on one as opposed to the other as their primary. To kind of go off of what you're saying, many of these concepts, whether it's time or life and death or love, seem to be built into the fabric of the world, and they just kind of are. Does that make sense? They're less active. They're more passive. They're kind of just like,
yes, they are.
And that's the way it's explained, is that these Aedra actually put themselves into the world, and that's part of their power being expressed through the world. And it's as if the Daedra are sitting on top of those cycles and more actively engaging in the world as it's already been constructed.
Yeah. And I guess that's, it almost makes them a little more relatable to us, as we don't just have deities floating down related to your religion in real life to interact with us. They're more metaphysical things. And like we've referenced a couple times, it's more of a representation of something, and it changes culture to culture. Whereas the Daedric princes are, this is what I do when I'm here, and I potentially going to directly screw stuff up, or help you in some cases. So they're more NPCs in the series. And to your point, these are more concepts, although, you know, they have their physical manifestations and stuff like that. They always strike me as more of a flavor text to enrich the world than actual creature, like, entities, the way some of the other things are, I guess, would be the easiest way that I could put that.
Yeah. And it makes sense that they're described the way they are. It's that they are just like it. They all represent these systems that underlie existence. Yep. Although some of the Daedric stuff is kind of represented in the same way, but it has more to do with personality and less about the nature of reality. Anyway, this section finishes up and says, sources have conflated Arke with the Yakudin goddess Morwa, who we're going to talk about after the break, in the past, although it's unknown if this was speaking to a true connection or was simply a scholarly mistake. Arke created the Sword of the Crusader for Pelennil Whitestrake, who we talked about, I think it was about a year ago, to help him defeat Umaril the Unfeathered. The Order of Arke has temples in Sentinel, Alessan Hills, Shalgora, Dragontail Mountains, and Orsinium. So fairly well known. Most of the cultures have some sort of connection to Arke, and it makes sense. Life and death is kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there you go. So tell you what, why don't we move on with the middle of the show? We're going to thank our patrons, and then we'll be back to talk about the Yakudins and their worship of Morwa and how that does or doesn't relate directly to Arke. And then we're going to talk about the planet and some other interesting stuff at the end. So stay tuned for that stuff.
The skies are marked with numberless sparks, each a fire and every one a sign.
So here we are in the middle of the show, and it's time to thank our patrons. Patrons! You guys are freaking amazing. Thank you for helping to support the show. Very, 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 very much appreciate it. This wouldn't be possible if it wasn't for you guys. So thank you from the bottom of my heart. So while I'm thanking you, I'm going to pull up our list and make sure that, guess who's still on the list? Who do you think?
I would guess the most tastiest pasta dish on the internet. That's also right. Very generous.
Yeah. Noodle al dente. Thank you, Noodle, for continuing to be our tier 5 patron. There's plenty of room for other patrons as well. If you guys would like to help support the show, you can sign up even at tier 1. You get ad-free episodes a day early. If you sign up at tier 4, you can join us at the end of the month and join us in chat. And there's a bunch of you guys at that tier as well. And this is something else that occurred to me recently. Because these shows are live on Twitch, another really easy free way to support the show financially is through your Amazon/Twitch gaming Prime sub. So if you have Amazon Prime, then you have a free Twitch Prime. They changed the name of it recently, didn't they? Like a Twitch Prime sub is what they used to be called. And it's really easy to do. So if you want to just pop over to twitch.tv/robotsradio, every month you can decide on which creator you want to send that to, and it helps support the show that way as well. So you're welcome to use those, and it's absolutely free. So if you're not using it already and have Amazon Prime, that's money that you could be giving to a creator that you're already paying for, so you might as well use it. And it doesn't have to be me, it could be Lotus. You could, if you want to watch Lotus bat, you know, ram his head against the wall playing some of these older games, then go support him as well. Use your Amazon Prime sub. So that's another way you guys could be helping to support the show, and it's no extra cost. It could be any of these people in our chat who are calling themselves out. If they stream, you could send it to them as well. But just go use it. You know, Bezos doesn't need the money.
Surprise. Twitch and Amazon have plenty. Share the wealth.
They've got plenty of money. You might as well send it to one of these creators. But again, thank you to our patrons. You guys are amazing. And let's get back to the rest of the show.
Have you ever wondered how deep the Elder Scrolls lore rabbit hole goes? Have you got a grasp of the basics and want to find out more about the universe? Written in Uncertainty is here to help you. We'll be mixing in philosophy, theology, and whatever other theory is useful with Elder Scrolls texts to untangle some of the biggest questions in the series, like what are Dragonbreaks, how does Chim work, where did the Dwemer go, and more. Check us out at writteninuncertainty.com or find Written in Uncertainty on any podcatcher. Thanks for listening, and catch you later in the Grey Maybe of Tamriel.
Yes, yes, you're entirely brilliant. Conquering madness and all that, blah, 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 blah.
So, Yakuda, always, it's going to feel like the kind of afterthought on a lot of these, but there's just less we know, honestly. There's less we know, and there's less involved with the majority of the races in Tamriel, but if you come from Yakuda, if you are a Red Guard, then you might be somebody who worships Morwa. Have you heard of Morwa Is this a name that you're familiar with, Lotus?
I've heard the actual name, much like last week. I'm enjoying the sections on the Divines because I've mentioned before that, like, I like learning some of the finer details of this stuff as we go. I have a more general knowledge. Mine's much more like delved into the game mechanics and stuff like that. So I have a background to this. I've heard the name Morwa in series and zero context to it prior. So yeah, getting to read the notes on this was kind of interesting because I had no clue about this weird kind of crossover almost.
Yeah, so Morwa has a little bit in common with Arkay, a little bit in common with we just mentioned her. What was her name? Morwa is Morwha. It's all she's also or it she typically goes by a feminine perspective here, also called the Teat God. They're just kidding. Hold on to that. And Lady Morwa is the Yakudin goddess of fertility and love. She is a fundamental deity in the Yakudin pantheon and is the favorite of wives of Tall Papa. We talked a little bit about Tall Papa before and the world's serpent and all that stuff. Morwa is always portrayed as four-armed so that she can grab more husbands. And that is a quote. Grab more husbands. So I guess not only does Tall Papa have multiple wives, but she also has multiple husbands because she's all about fertility. So, you know, might as well bring them all in. Just have a big old party. That's what those are called, right? Parties. There's a special word for that kind of party. Her shrines are the shape of a beehive. She was described by potentate Versidu Shea as the lusty fertility goddess of the Yakudins, but not as lusty as Dibella.
Mid-tier lustiness.
It doesn't say it right here, but she four arms aren't the only things she has four of. She also has four breasts. Her priestesses are known to officiate and marry couples. Sources have conflated Arkay of the Divines with Morwa in the past, although it's unknown if it was a true connection or a scholarly mistake, as we noted before. Ornate silver teaspoons, set of four, are a way of honoring Morwa, one for each of her breasts, not arms. Although arms would make sense with teaspoons because you use your hands to pick things up. Breasts. Right. Sure. But nope. Boobs. One for each of her boobs.
Perfect.
There is a Morwa conservatorium in the city of Hegeth. There is one known play involving Morwa, which is called Lady Morwa's Latest Marriage. So there you go.
Just keeping busy.
But, you know, the life, death cycle, mother, fertility, all of these things are connected. And again, Mara seems like that could be similar as well to that connection. So there you go.
Huh. So, interestingly enough, because actually I was curious, I didn't want to jump too much ahead, but one thing that I think is actually somewhat worth a note, just talking about the cultural specific bits, since we're going with Yakudin at the moment, when we're over in, it's actually the best way to experience it is if you do play Elder Scrolls Online. When you are in the Alakir Desert, there are several situations where the Red Guard religion is very, very opposed to necromancy, and the dead need to be honored properly. And you actually, as a result of them being, it's problematic for them to even defeat reanimated Red Guards, because that's essentially a sin. And in that situation, you come in and basically lend a hand helping fight back all these reanimated zombies. In which case, it seems like the Red Guard culture as a whole would have a pretty strong reverence for Arkay because of needing to adhere so much to that, because man, not even being able to slay back or reanimated versions of your ancestors or whatever, that is quite a bind to be in. And relating previously to what we were talking about, if Arkay was a little more involved, like a Daedric Prince, for example, it would be interesting if Arkay was able to, I don't know, actually come in and put these things down, as opposed to until you show up, it's just zombies. And I believe they're called Runatu in the region, if I'm not.
Yeah, I don't recall the actual name. Off the top. Yeah.
If somebody knows specifically what they're called, but I'm pretty sure they're called the Runatu. But if Arkay had a little more direct involvement instead of being this nebulous force, it'd be nice if Arkay could lend a hand instead of letting the Red Guards get torn asunder by their reanimated ancestors. So it's a little more, you know, of a in-game reference to just how these things are a bit more metaphorical than they are direct involvement type of deal. So
yeah, and you know, there's always a little bit about like the power of a specific god might actually be related to how many people believe in or worship them and that sort of thing. So you have to wonder if that's the case, were these versions of the deities more powerful back in the time of Yakuta than they are
very valid
more currently, you know, like how does that affect things?
I mean, I guess if you want to get really stretched out on exactly how, well, I mean, even though necromancy would essentially be breaking the cycle of life and death, if the Runatu or zombies are killing other people, then they're contributing further to the cycle of life and death. So is that
natural?
I don't know. It gets,
is it unnatural death? Is it natural death?
It gets a little dicey. I'd be curious on what people would think of a situation like that. Would that fit the realm? Because then you're using unnatural means to cause more of the cycle to perpetuate, but by using the unnatural means, did you break the cycle to begin? I don't know. It's getting weird. So we can just move on from that. Just a little side tangent from that quest line that I found fascinating in the Al'Akir Desert of the Daggerfall Covenant.
Yeah. And I think it just, you know, lends a little bit more to the idea that it's all about interpretation, right? Like, how do you interpret these things and how do they actually play out? So let's get to the planet. There's always a planet with these divines, and the planet known as Arkay, which is sometimes called Arkhet, R-K-H-E-T, which is an interesting word and spelling for something similar to Arkay. And this isn't fully attributed in the wiki, but it seems that there's a reference somewhere to that being called Eye of the Thief, maybe due to the location, but it's the attribution right now is not confirmed, so
interesting. You know,
take that for what it is one of the dominion planets in the skies Mundus, and according to the warrior poet Vivect, who we've talked about before, it is one of the eight known worlds. Arkay marks the Eye of the Thief constellation. The planet is simultaneously Arkay and the plane of Arkay, just like the other planets and their eponymous patrons. So we've talked about that with Akatosh. Words are difficult,
words are
guys.
Words are hard.
I had to explain to my wife the other day. She was like, just use the Alexa in order to just tell her what you want to do. You don't have to hit the button. And I was like, it's easier to just hit a button than it is for me to remember what words to specifically tell her in order to get her to do the thing I want her to do. And she's like, really? And I was like, yeah.
Yeah, just, when you spend a lot of time speaking, you tend to jumble up your words quite frequently.
I don't remember what specific phrase and how to, like, she's like, well, just talk to it. And I'm like, it takes me more effort to talk than just hit a button. So I'm just gonna hit a button. Old man me is coming out, I guess. Speaking of old man me, it is a month till my birthday and I'm feeling real old. But anyway.
Yeah. Gonna start yelling at clouds.
Hey, get off my lawn, cloud. Dad, that's a shadow. I don't care. Yeah, I need to figure out what I want for my birthday too. I should probably come up with something fun to get. Anyway, it goes on and says, for the longest, this part's really cool. So we talked about Manny Marco, right? For the longest time, nothing had orbited the small planet of Arkay. That was until the King of Worms, Manny Marco, had ascended to godhood in light of the warp in the West. And again, this section is needing a little bit of citation, but it seems that it tends to be assumed that the planet that he would have ascended would have been Arkay because he was a necromancer. And get this, he had apparently taken on a new form, the necromancer's moon, and eclipses Arkay's light once every 8 days, shining down a purple light called the Shade of the Revenant. Various altars constructed in far off places like the Dark Fissures harness the light to create black soul gems. So get this, when your main adversary as a necromancer and the most powerful necromancer the world has ever seen is a god, and you ascend to a form of godhood, then why not turn into a orbital body around it in order to block its light? Holy crap. That's awesome.
That's like intense god trolling at that point.
Yes, that is really freaking cool. Like this idea that like, well, we can't completely block out the light, but why not turn into a moon that orbits it? So at least you block it out one out of every 8 days.
Right.
That's really, really a cool concept. Crystal King. I always want to say talking because it looks like Chris talking.
Talking?
Yeah, I don't know. He says he used the Mandela, if I'm not mistaken. Gotta love it. Yeah, so cool stuff. What do you think about this, Lotus?
So that was all new to me when I was the planet part of this is very fascinating because as far as I know, at least from any experiences I have with the games, I never realized the planetary connection. This is all kind of new to me that the Divines have their own planet, which I mean, it makes sense when you've got, you know, the Daedric realms and it's so, but finding out about them is very fascinating to see because they're rather strange. I almost wish that the series would involve the planetary aspect of this a little more than it does. They've been delving into constellation types and things like that.
Yeah.
In more recent games, but yeah, just in general, it's very cool to have that outer. I guess there's only so much where you leave the physical plane of Nern outside Oblivion, but it's just an extra layer of something there that I've been interested in learning more about as we go through these.
Yeah, think about the Elsewhere storyline in Elder Scrolls Online.
Joe, yep.
You end up on these moons, which is cool. Like that's probably one of the first instances I can think of actually leaving the planet. If that's actually where you go, but it seemed like, as far as I can tell, it was not figurative. It's not like you were going to some sort of magical realm. Yeah.
Right. They were gorgeous too. I just love the art design to them. They were very, very alien.
I think that there's a lot to be, that might be paving the way in some cases for future ESO content or future mainline games to experiment with, you know, moving off the freaking planet, which could be cool, or visiting other continents. You know, I mean, that's just as foreign in some ways as some of these other planets. This idea that like parts of Yakuta might be left, or Atmora, or, you know, wherever any of these other supposedly sunken or supposedly still there or not still there continents out in the world. So hopefully we do. I love when we get this kind of stuff. I love when we get content that answers a little bit, but leaves us with more questions than when we started with. That's what I want.
Yeah. And so the other thing that I made reference to in the pre-show that this is just for the video version of this, I wanted to actually make reference. So each one of these divines has their own little statue, which you will see in the different games, ESO, Skyrim, everything like that. You pray to them in games and you get different status effects, which is also kind of useful, at least in Skyrim. So I didn't do it last week. We'll narrow it down. Alkosh, it's a dragon. There you go. That's picture it in your mind's eye. It's a dragon. but easy Arkay's, peasy. Yes, Arkay, which for anybody watching the live version, is an interest. Some of these are fascinating statues, which is why I kind of wanted to make reference to them. Arkay is like an orb with a star that it's in the middle of on a pedestal. I don't know. I was kind of looking briefly. I don't know if these things have a lot of deep meaning to their design or if it's just like artistic vision. Mm-hmm. But I personally, the reason that I thought of this and why I would like to show them going forward, because it's just a visual aid for anybody that's interested. I love the design of the one for Arkay personally. That's why it's on my desk. I didn't actually need to go get it off my shelf from behind me. It's just next to my TV. Uh-huh. I have no idea, like, you know, what the reasoning is. I just think it's a very cool design. And like I made reference to earlier, I like just the concept of Arkay. I'm not a big necromancer person. I'm in the minority on that with a lot of stuff. People love their necromancy, but that's never my thing. When I kill something, I want it dead. So I just like Arkay in general and think Arkay is a pretty cool divine, at least in theory, even though, you know, as we had said, they don't really involve themselves in mortal affairs all that much, but seems pretty integral to things to keep the flow of everything going. Otherwise, you get into a messy situation of everybody's half dead roaming around the fields as zombies and stuff like that. So, you know, you got to keep things buried or otherwise you're going to just end up with a mess.
Yeah. Yeah. So other fun little bits of, I don't know, trivia here at the end of it. So in other cultures, Arkay's name is a little bit different. Orky is used in the Nordics. And then the Bosmers and the Altmers will say Zarxes sometimes. And that seems to be connected to Arkay. Also, and this is interesting, you talked about the symbol. Arkay's symbol is on the label of Magicka and Stamina Poisons. And specifically in Skyrim, so that symbol will show up on some of the poison vials and things. And this is kind of cool, Arkay was named after one of the original beta testers of Daggerfall. Arkay,
wow, now that's trivia right there.
Yeah, Arkay, and it's Dutch, D-E-U-T-S-C-H. I don't know the proper pronunciation of the last name. But yeah, a lot of these were named after people who had worked on some of the early games. So pretty cool stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's what we got for Arkay this week. We'll be back next week with another one of the divines. What's going on in ESO lately? How have things kind of fixed? We talked Monday. It hasn't been very long. As we mentioned in the last episode, had to delay the last episode a few extra days. And so now Lotus and I are doing this again just a few days later. But things kind of cleared up for PlayStation. And
so they got the servers back up earlier than they had foretold, which is, you know, probably a relief from them. They've had to shift things around a bit where you were going to be missing rewards theoretically for stuff. So they pushed stuff forward, gave us some extra gifts on PlayStation. And then they also universally extended the anniversary event that is currently going on in Elder Scrolls Online. So that's pretty neat for everybody involved. It's just more event stuff. It's still going on for like a week or so, a little less than that now, but ESO is still chugging along. Lots of new stuff coming out for the new chapter on the way. That'll be hitting PTS before too long. They're starting to do preview events for it and all that good stuff. So exciting stuff coming to all of those of you who actually play Elder Scrolls Online.
Yeah. Yeah, this is kind of that time of the year where it gets the buzz just builds and builds for the next few months until it releases. So that's fun. It's good times with that. I need to go finish up some of my questing in some other areas in order to make sure I'm ready. So I've been...
Yeah, well, prologue's out, so you can do that,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, prologue's out. I need to do that. I've been pulled back into Fallout 76. I've been pulled back into New Vegas because we're talking about that in the Fallout Lorecast. I'm just like... Every time, and then there's new games that come out, and I'm like, "Oh, that looks good." I just want to play all the games. I just want to play all of them. Can I play all of them? Can I play them all at the same time? Is that possible? I think I need extra brains to do all of that.
Mega multitasking.
Oh yeah, mega multitasking. Awesome. Well, you got anything else going on before we head out?
Not too much. We'll be recording Tales again, ideally, on Saturday. I might end up being a little late because I've got something going, but I'm still hoping to make it, for the show. And otherwise, I've just been kind of, overwhelmed and dealing with real life stuff. So I have not been able to stream myself, which is unfortunate because I have a lot of fun doing it and hanging out with everybody. Ideally, I'll be able to get back to it pretty soon. At the moment, it's really about getting back to Battlespire for everybody's entertainment so I can progress through that. But with the new champion point system in Elder Scrolls Online and currently having double XP, which lets you get champion points faster, I really have been making the most of that when I have time to play. So hopefully things will settle back down and I can get back to streaming on my own stuff as well, because I like being able to stream before this show and then just kind of jump over from that, and I haven't had that option recently, which is kind of a bummer.
Yeah Well, hopefully that works out. Always fun to when your audience comes on over and, you know, chimes in and stuff, so love seeing those guys during our streams. Let's see, what do I have going on? I've been focusing, as I mentioned before, in the last episode, a lot on our Rocket Club members, people who want to launch their own podcasts, and, you know, talking with that group and helping them out. So if you're interested in starting your own podcast, go check out robotsradio.net/rocket-club for the tips and things that that I can share with you, because that's what we do. I help a bunch of new podcasts get launched, make sure that they're marketing themselves correctly, designing the show the way they should, that their gear is what they need to get the best quality they can get, because you want to make sure that first episode is as good as possible, because it's going to affect your potential listeners from that point forward. So happy to help you out with that stuff. Go check that out. And otherwise, just been, you know, streaming some games and shows and doing the things I do. And if you are interested in joining us, chiming in on any of the conversation, then check out the Discord, the Robots Radio Discord. Send us some notes and messages over there, or just, you know, join us for a future stream. That's what we got going. That seems to be about it. This feels like a quicker episode than usual. I guess there isn't as much to go about
The divines are probably going to be a little more condensed than some of the episodes, because they're not as involved as some of the other topics we've been doing. So I would imagine most of these episodes will probably be a little under an hour, as opposed to just kind of going over that hour mark. I know we always try to keep it around the same time, but these ones, just informationally, I would imagine that we'll cover everything, unless there's something that I don't know that we'll be learning in one of the other ones. They'll probably, I would assume, all be a little more condensed, at least on a whole.
Yeah. So one last thing, Lotus. We know that we're also coming up on the summer, right? We're in the spring. We're in the build up to what is going to be the E3 digital event, and potentially some info that's being released or new stuff from Bethesda. Do you think we're going to get more info on the next Elder Scrolls? And I think you might still be muted because I see the light blinking. There you go.
Thank you for pointing that out. Yeah, I did not realize it was. Yeah, I'm not sure. I still think that the next one is a ways off. I don't.
Yeah.
I can't imagine we're going to... I do think we'll probably see something with Starfield, but I cannot imagine we'll see anything with, like, an actual Elder Scrolls 6 beyond maybe, like, another little short teaser.
Not like a little story teaser or some sort of, like, you know, like a... What if we get a teaser trailer? That might be possible. It doesn't show any in-game stuff. It maybe just gives us a little glimpse of, like... Oh my God, is that this character? Or something like that. And then, of course, keeps the buzz going. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that as much as everybody is excited, and they have dropped little hints here and there on Twitter and, you know, et cetera. But I can't imagine that they are going to jump to this before we see Starfield. Like, that's the next bullet point. Yeah. So as interested as everybody is, and unfortunately, there's still a lot of people who don't want to acknowledge that Elder Scrolls Online is a thing because it's not a single player game.
Right.
Which is, you know, you do you. But the game is immensely popular and makes them a lot of money. They're not going to probably rush out the next Elder Scrolls game until they start to see at least something of a decline or at least a stagnation. Because right now it's not even stagnating. The player count just keeps going up.
Yeah, so 18 million at this point.
They're not looking for a reason to move on from the storytelling in Elder Scrolls Online yet. There's still a lot to be covered. So I know people are excited for it, but that releasing Elder Scrolls 6 will kind of dig into the same demographic of players. Mm-hmm. So I would just be personally very surprised if they rushed into something like that.
Yeah, I doubt that they're going to. I mean, they're obviously not rushing. But at the same time, there's part of me that's just like, are they going to tease us something?
Are they going to tease us another little morsel?
Which, in the way that you could do that, in a way that it would actually build ESO, would be to tease a character or event that is connected. We talked about a little bit about this last week, that is connected to maybe a new year of content with ESO in the future, or the current year of content of ESO.
Right.
You know, like, oh, this is what TES6 is going to deal with on some level. And by the way, if you want to know more about that right now, things are happening in ESO that tie into that, that set a foundation historically for the things that might be happening in TES6. So I don't know.
Right.
It's just a thought. You never, like, these studios are huge and they're big and there's lots of moving parts, but at the same time, there's so much potential for some really cool crossover stuff that you could do. And they've done in the past, you know, like tie-ins between Legends and ESO and like things like that have happened. So you never know.
I like the crossovers when they do them. So it's like more of that is new. Brand Synergy, I think, is the ridiculous name that's spun for that stuff.
Right.
More of that. I love that stuff.
Brand Synergy. There you go. All right. Well, that's just some more fun speculating. I love a good speculation. I also like when I speculate and I'm right about things. And I also enjoy when I'm wrong, because then usually I'm like, oh, that's cool anyway. Yay.
So I'm not to drag this episode out to actually get us to an hour, but one thing just quickly to mention, in terms of speculation, a couple episodes back, when you and I were kind of just spitballing ideas on what could be coming in the Flames of Ambition, they have recently shown more of that. And the Oblivion Gates.
Yeah, the portals.
Actually, we got tagged about it. People have been bringing it up.
Yes.
Our idea of kind of like, well, I don't know, maybe it'll be a little more of a an instance thing. Turns out it looks like it just straight up is, and we were more on the ball than it seemed like we were.
You never know who listens to these shows. I do know that people at Bethesda listen to these shows. You have to wonder, like, in the back room somewhere, if, like, after the show somebody looked at somebody else and was like, Did you hear the episode that they just did? They nailed it. Did anyone leak that? No.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that was.
Yeah. No, we didn't know. We didn't know. That was just speculation. It's just, you know what, Lotus? It's just more evidence that you and I need to be working in game design.
Clearly. Well, because I think you said something around there, like, what about having it be like an instance thing? And then we got off on that tangent of basically very similar to what it looks like it is. And it's like, oh, that's neat. Like,
yeah.
So, yeah, very, very cool stuff.
Yeah. So anyway, cool stuff. So go check out the preview. Go look at there's some videos they put up recently that show how that stuff works. Really freaking cool, especially once you're running around with a giant Meru's Dagon, like, stomping. It's just, man, imagine if that stuff was in the original Oblivion. That would have been phenomenal. I don't think the engine could have handled it back then, but
probably not.
I wonder if that was an original idea from back then that they just weren't able to do, and it was like on the cutting room floor, and then they pulled up that stuff and they're like, oh, we could do this. I don't know. You never know.
Yeah. Yep. It's very curious because they it seems like they never really want to throw out ideas. Because some of the stuff that, I mean, Merkmeyer was supposed to be originally like an adventure zone, like Craglorn, and then years and years later, we get it as a totally different version of what it was, and it's got a four-player arena in it. It's like, okay, so this one underwent some changes. Interesting, but it was never thrown away, so.
Right. Man, I want some more Brotherhood content. I want them, even if they just expanded it out, if they did like, you know, a DLC part two or something. Yeah. And just expanded the story with some more quests and things. That would be fun. Anyway, well, that's it for today's episode. Thank you for joining us. And sorry if we spilled the beans without even knowing it. I promise nobody leaked anything. We're just coming up with stuff. You know, the trick is to just throw out as many ideas as possible. This is why psychics actually have careers. It's not because they have a good rate of actually predicting anything, because if you look at the stats, they're actually really bad at it.
Throw it all out there.
But throw a bunch of ideas out there, and guess which ideas people remember? The ones that land, not the 50 other ones that never actually happened. So
that was, I mean, years ago, before Elsewhere dropped, that was our approach at Tales. We named every dragon that had been in the series prior to, and surprise, Naphalargus was one of the dragons that like called it.
Called it. We called it. We totally called it. No, you just freaking named all the dragons. There you go. Oh, man. All right. Well, that's it for the show. Thank you for being here, everybody. Until next time, stay safe out there in the crazy world and of life and death. And try not to practice necromancy, or you'll piss off the RK worshippers. Or, you know, just take matters into your own hand. Become an orbiting body to block out RK's light. You never know. What if Manny Marco is behind the Thalmer? What if he's the one that shows up in the teaser?
Oh, wow.
That would be freaking amazing. That would be awesome. Is that even possible? I don't even know. All right. We'll see you guys later. Stay tuned if you're in chat right now. We'll be back with the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast in about half an hour. I'll put up on some rap videos or something. Until then, I'll see you guys next time. Later, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. If you have something you'd like to contribute to the show, please reach out to us at elderscrollslorecast@gmail.com or on Twitter at @ESOLorecast. I really appreciate you listening, and I'd love to hear from you soon.
You've been listening to a Robots Radio podcast. Smart shows for interesting people. Check out all the shows at robotsradio.net.
In a world where solid-state electronics and vacuum tubes are still meta, people never stop loving atomic-powered everything. A chosen 500 stepped inside a subterranean vault to be spared the nuclear horror of the inevitable Great War. 25 years later, they emerge after the fallout settles to retake Appalachia. Among them, two former rivals whose blood feud will tear West Virginia apart and their epic struggle for survival. Chad, a vault bro who has a strength of 15, an intelligence of 2, and is a complete wasteland dickhead. Simon, a complicated anti-hero who chooses light and hope, but accidentally becomes a cannibal and wakes up naked and afraid with a Scorch Beast Queen after a date goes terribly wrong. What? I mean, it's a wild wasteland, right? This dark humor radio drama will have you driving off the road and crawling out from under the fallout. Two men. One wasteland. And so many nukes. Chad, a Fallout 76 podcast, rated R, now streaming on your holotape player podcasty thing.
Do you like adventure?
Yeah.
Do you like laughing?
Yeah.
Would you like to listen to a group of people you don't know play D&D and reference retro pop culture you vaguely remember? Excellent. you're going to love Committee Quest. We play D&D in the world of Amaran. We use adventure modules and supplements made by people in the community. We also have a sweet synthwave backing track. Come and join us on our adventure.
Volume 1 has been completed. Volume 2 coming the end of January.
You can find us on iTunes, Podbean, or wherever you get your podcasts from.